Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. All Sleep Number smart beds offer temperature solutions for your best sleep. And now, get early access to Memorial Day deals. Save 30% on our most popular smart bed, i8. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Aliens come down. We give them an Oreo. They split
immediately
the Oreo.
Split the Oreo.
And, like, lick out the frosting.
And even do a little teeth, like, at the end.
The whole humanity would start applauding. We'd
humanity
start cheering.
Would be like, we have so much more in common than different.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Yes. Step up to the mic to introduce Daisy. That's his name, Bob, while I'm panicking. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Days at Night. Thank you so much for coming.
I'm so stoked to be here.
I'm so stoked that you're here. Will you give us a little bit of a brief background on who you are, what you do?
Yeah, I can do that. So, okay, so some people would just call me a mechanical engineer because technically that is what I usually do.
Right.
But I usually think of myself as like a creative engineer because I work on really weird stuff. Sometimes it's like edible engineered nonsense. Like I was on a Netflix show baking edible machines, basically. And sometimes I work on really like sort of experiential stuff like robots that make art or like weird machines. That's a pretty bad description.
So you're like a mad scientist of sorts.
I mean, I
would
say.
If you
want
to be like fun and quirky.
I think so. Let's say quirky mad scientist.
I'm like a quirky mad scientist.
Yeah, that's a good label, actually.
My dad's kind of a mad scientist, actually. Ooh. So I have a soft spot for it.
Oh, I saw in one of your previous episodes, you cited that your father was explaining to you. Was this the chicken and egg thing you called him about?
It was. I called him about like what's north of the North Pole.
Right.
I was like, what the hell? Yeah, and he didn't know either. He was like, nothing.
Yeah, you got me with that. When I saw you explaining that on the previous episode, I was like, what is north of the North Pole?
Because it's like, it's a good nonsensical question, but it was driving me actually insane. But yeah, my dad, I thought he would know because he knows stuff like that. He did mathematics undergrad.
Nice.
And then he went and like tried to do a PhD at Johns Hopkins, and then he got a law degree. So he's like,
whoa,
very school. And I'm a college dropout.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
But he's very proud nonetheless. Hard pill for John to swallow for a second, though. But he did do a lot of like crazy experiments, which is part of the reason why, like, when Michael suggested you for the show, I was like, I would love that.
Yeah.
He was always doing weird stuff. Is that you?
That is me for sure. I'm always like, if you ever have like a thing that breaks, like in a room, like I'm usually out of the room immediately sprinting like to my backpack, finding a tool. Like I just always have tools
You're
and materials.
MacGyver.
I'm like, very MacGyver. But usually doesn't like MacGyver stuff end with explosions usually?
Yeah, he's actually not that good at fixing stuff, evidently. But I believe that you have significantly less explosions.
I mean, only sometimes explosions can be
that's
really
why
nice.
I said less. Yeah. Sometimes what if
only intentional ones.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had any explosions lately, but for my birthday last year, my housemate got me a small rocket engine.
Oh.
And I've been like just thinking like what would be fun to shoot into not space, but like quite high up.
Right. That's actually a good question. I will mull that for you because what would be cool? You should do something different for sure. And all I know is like one time my dad set our toilet on fire and it had
toilet.
Like a column of flames.
But a toilet has water in it.
Exactly. Because his mom dumped like a chemical that is not compatible with water into the toilet.
Oh, good.
And luckily didn't flush it. Could have been way worse. Just blown up the
house. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What a story that would have been.
I know. But I'm pretty sure he's got to be on watch lists or shit like that. But where do you feel like, were you like a kid that had like a chemistry set or was it a later in life thing for you?
As a little kid, I would say my identifying he's going to be an engineer feature was breaking everything. Like if there was anything that technology that was in the room, like my parents would have to actively tell me
please.
Don't take apart the cable box. Like,
yeah.
Don't take apart the garage door opener. And I'd be like taking apart the garage door
That's
opener.
literally something I only do if I take Adderall.
Well, I also have ADHD.
Yeah.
So it tracks because I was a very Adderalled up little kid.
Yeah, me too. And I would also take things apart in the house, like the cable box, to see what's in there and then try and put it back together, which sometimes
you get it.
And sometimes you can't.
It's like you want to know how it works and then you're like, well, I didn't mean to break it.
Yeah.
I'll try to put it back
like
together.
I thought that these pieces could come apart when I was ripping them apart. I didn't know how hard it would be to like recombine them. I did go to a robotics camp once, which was like fun and I loved it. I feel like you would excel in a robotics camp.
Okay, yeah. This is where like I have a dualism in my life. It's like I tried doing like the little kid robotics, but it was always at the same time as like my improv and theater like classes and camps or whatever.
Right.
And I was always like, oh my God, am I a like software robot kid or am I like a theater kid?
Right.
And like you have to.
It's a hard decision, Troy Bolton.
Literally. Although you would not want me playing basketball. That would not.
Same. I'm really bad. But I love engineers because I love and hate actually because STEM school, I did a couple engineering classes. I did a multidisciplinary study when I went to like my second school before I dropped out. And it was so I could do like an engineering track, but with a design emphasis.
Amazing.
Thank you. But obviously I dropped out.
Right. But,
so you're better than me, bro. But the STEM space is interesting because it's such like a fascinating area. You get to learn all these cool things, like even things that like people might not consider from an outside perspective, like ethics in engineering.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like just because you can, should you? How could this thing be misused? Things like that. But simultaneously, the STEM space is so incredibly toxic.
Yeah. It's really a funny thing how it's like so known that STEM has issues with just being exclusionary in general, whether that's like orientation, race, gender, backgrounds, or like competitiveness. Like there's so many dimensions where like...
Yeah, it's cutthroat.
Yeah, super cutthroat. I feel like when I was an undergrad, I felt like it was always the students versus the...
Faculty?
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's the best perspective.
It was great because it'd be like all of us like furious about like homework or an exam, but like we were on a team together.
Yeah.
And then in grad school, I feel like I really experienced like the...
What?
The classic like STEM...
Competitiveness?
Yeah. And the... Have you ever... Do you know any... Like, have I, let me try that sentence again. Do you have any friends who are like PhD students and like going through like the ringer of grad school?
Just absolutely suffering. What's interesting about like the grad school experience from what I know as just hearing about it secondhand is that's when like the IP stuff really starts to like...
Oh, yeah.
Get terrible. Like, will you be cited on your professor's work or will he be cited on your work or she, you know? And I feel like that's where like, that's why it becomes so competitive.
Totally. And it's like, there's kind of enough IP to go around.
Totally.
It's just when the only path you can go on is grad student to postdoc to, if you're lucky, like associate professor. And if you're super lucky, maybe eventually you'll get a lab. And when all that's related to like quantity of papers you publish, it's like people are so insane about clout. Like nobody's wanting to share.
Yeah. Well, and also I think what like people don't realize about like patents in particular, because like I did, my dad's a patent attorney. That's why he did all the chemistry stuff before the law school. And I did patent illustrations for engineers for a long time, for like 15 years.
That is so cool.
It is cool. So monotonous for most people, but like I enjoyed it and I got a couple patents out of it because I know how to like write them now with the help of my dad. But what people don't realize about patents, because like no one cares about patents until they think they have a $1 million idea or they're in the engineering space, you know? And so the name order on collaborators, like people don't realize unless they're in that space how much the order matters. And I think that's why it gets so competitive, because it's between like your professor might be listed first, but maybe you're second and it's between you and this other guy. So what are you going to do about that?
Oh my God. Like if you just... The order of names has caused me so much distress in my life. Like, oh my goodness. It's like the biggest it creates so much drama. It's like so juicy. It's like Real Housewives of the academic laboratory would be so good, because everybody's like, there's people are playing games with each other. It's like, oh, I'd love to help you on this.
But and they're trying to snake in there.
They're just trying to get their name in there.
And there's really, from what I can tell, there's no getting around the name, because like if you put a horizontal, there's still a who's first.
So
if you put it vertical, it, obviously. So
there's like some like subtle other meanings about the orders of names. Mm-hmm. So like you may know this, but like first is usually who contributed most. But sometimes it can be like who sort of like produced or project managed it in a sense. So you never really know if the first name...
That's how the professors get in there on a lot of IP that they kind of maybe didn't have as big of an impact on as they might
Big time. But then the last name also has like the most clout. That's like the brand. So like if you're in a research lab with a single professor leading it, they're almost always the last author on everything.
Yeah.
So that they can like just be attached to everything.
It's like a sandwich.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
A cloud sandwich. So if you're in the middle... Devastating.
Yeah, totally. In the middle, you're like
might as well not even be there.
Literally.
Yeah.
Oh, you might grind away. Like, you might spend a semester of not seeing any of your friends, not seeing the light of day, and then you're the seventh name.
Yeah, and like that's the tragedy of like the STEM space. Also, is like it's so like time intensive, mm-hmm. and you might have somebody just swoop in there last second. And now it's people think it's like low-key their project, and you put so much time into this. It's especially worse if you're like an overlooked group in STEM. You know, then it's really frustrating. Mm-hmm. But like I love that like you went through that entire like just debilitating process, and you came out on the other side with whimsy still.
Oh.
And you want to do the fun, weird projects. Because a lot of people get out and then they're just like straight to corporate, and they've lost their lust for engineering and stuff, and you're not really one of those people.
No. And there was one experience that like set me on the path to not work at a car company or a spaceship company, basically. Although ironically, actually, okay. So picture this. You are me. So you're a 5'9" man. but you're a sophomore in college. And like you're sold on mechanical engineering. Like you think this is the coolest thing. But you need an internship. Everyone's going to work at car companies. Mm-hmm. But I got an internship at what is actually the world's largest car company. It's not what you'd expect, though. Like, if you had to guess what is the world's largest car company.
Now I feel thrown, because I was going to guess Volkswagen Group.
That might be the right answer, but this is a trick question.
Okay, what's the answer?
So Hot Wheels manufactures hundreds of millions.
You're so right. It would have to be Hot Wheels.
Yeah. Now, you can't drive those cars.
Yeah, it's a different type of car, but in a very literal sense, it is the biggest, smallest car company.
Biggest, smallest car company.
Yeah.
So true. But so I interned at Mattel, which makes Hot Wheels and Matchbox, and I saw people doing the weirdest stuff.
You're the boardroom scene in the Barbie movie.
Oh my, when I saw that
That's
movie.
That's you.
Literally, like, there was always the tension of, like, the colorful, weird, creative stuff that I feel like a lot of the Margot Robbie Barbie character in that scene exemplified. And then the, like... There literally is a tower there, like a tall building with the business people.
And you're like, oh no.
I'm like, wow.
Where am I in here?
I was in the side that was fighting for colorful, weird, whimsical.
As you should. Of course,
toys.
Because you're like a true creative.
Thank you. I like to think
so. You're welcome. Creative and a creator. Love it.
For sure. So, but I was like surrounded by toy makers.
Yeah.
A lot of whom had engineering backgrounds.
Sorry, I love this story. Like, keep going, but I feel like you're living like a Santa elf.
Oh, I call that my summer in the toy box, because I literally felt like I was in a children's like toy chest. Like, there was just toys everywhere. And like, you can go to certain parts of the campus that do feel like Santa's workshop, because it's just like aisles of Barbie heads that are being like tested.
That
like,
is so cool.
It was really awesome.
That's so cool.
Like, you see everything on the shelf when you go into a toy store or a department store, but like the supply chain behind them is always so crazy when you get like a peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, because they're actually really very intricate, even down to the paint. So if you think about it from like an engineering perspective, just like the way in which they're manufacturing them at such a high volume with such intricacy, it would have to be its own incredible machine.
It totally was. I mean, and still is. Like, if you are an avid Hot Wheels or Matchbox collector.
I am now.
Well, if you put cars that are model years apart next to each other, mm-hmm. sometimes you'll notice the only difference is paint and body color, because you can change so much about how it looks and feels just by changing the color of the injection mold.
So why change, like, why change the shape?
Exactly. You can save a lot of money by not making a new mold to inject in, basically. But yeah, it's super, super precise. Like, the people who have worked on manufacturing die-cast cars are, like, as smart as anybody can be.
Right.
It's crazy.
Dude, it would have to be. Okay, so you went your own unique route. You went to do cars in your way.
And then I was like, oh, that was nice. Like, I want to keep chasing weird things instead of the expected sort
of. Man after my own heart, dude.
I mean, it's like better that way, right? Like,
yeah, I think so.
If everything was as the average person does it, then we kind of already know exactly how our life was going to be, right?
Yeah. And you want like the excitement of what's coming next,
mark. So yeah, I worked on die-cast cars. Explosion of curiosity. I was like, I'm like in search of weirdness now.
Yeah.
And I think your question was, like, why did I not go be normal?
Yeah, why didn't you follow a more traditional STEM route, like have like the whimsy sucked out of you?
I saw kids playing with toys in this job and I was like, oh my goodness, like engineering is a process for optimizing things usually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's optimize the cost, the weight, the performance, whatever it is. But I realized you can also optimize for joy, for whimsy, for like playfulness.
Yeah.
And I was like, engineering is actually this really powerful process that can be applied to
anything.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was it. I was just like, I'm going to take this skill and apply it to as weird of things as I can possibly find.
And you know what's so interesting about that? Even though it's like a completely divergent approach, at its core, it is exactly what engineering is supposed to be, which is looking at a problem and finding a solution, you know, and going like, I don't like how this is. How can I fix it? And you've just applied that to fun.
I think so. I mean, and I think more engineers should, for what it's worth.
Yeah, like, I think so too. The Hot Wheels thing reminds me, like, not to just spend this whole episode talking about my dad, but like, he one time, you know, PVC pipe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So fun. You can do so much with it.
Oh, yeah.
We came home to our apartment, like, when we were, like, building our new house in Texas, because he used to work at, like, 3M, so they move you down into, like, an apartment and stuff. And 3M had, like, a ton of PVC pipe. Like, it was, like, new. And when we got home, he had made, like, a Hot Wheels track that filled like practically our entire apartment out of PVC, because he was supposed to like take it home and test it out, and like that was the way he chose to test it out. And I loved it. My mom hated it, but I thought it was awesome. And when you do like more creative jobs in engineering, which is like what he was doing at that time,
mm-hmm.
you do get to interact with things like toys, like clear Legos. Clear Legos were invented in like about like 1998 or like 2000 or whatever, when 3M was at least like toying with the idea. And my dad took them home for my brother and I to play with as like a sort of like first round test. Like, they hadn't done any sort of testing groups yet. And those Legos, they had four for us, to this day are still stuck together because the material that they made them out of doesn't separate. And they're so early in the process, they hadn't tried to stack them on one another yet.
Wow.
And so then they had to go back to the drawing board and start over, because the first thing we did was stick them together, try and pull them apart, and they're still together.
Huh.
So like, it's,
wow,
there's like a whole trial and error for toys and things too.
I learned that, and I learned this partly at Mattel, but partly through classes in school. There's like this concept of play testing, and in toys and goods where like kids use stuff, there's always like a pattern that they notice just about every kid does with just about every toy. So like, you can take a toy and there's like a common set of patterns. So Hot Wheels, for example, are every kid will throw them against the wall. Like, this will happen. You must test the toy for being thrown against a wall.
That makes sense. Cause I guess, yeah, every kid would eventually throw a car at a wall. Cause like they go, it crashed.
And then for dolls, can you guess what the doll behavior is?
I feel like for dolls, they take like the legs and do that at some point. Cause I remember I always would make my Barbies like dance and be like, do the splits.
Yo, that's like pretty close. Like,
really?
The first thing that they notice every kid does is take off all the clothing and splay the limbs out like as wide as they can possibly go.
Yes.
And, like, everybody remembers doing that.
Yeah.
Like, why do we, I don't
know. I don't know.
It's deep. It's like dogs fetch kids make Barbies naked and throw Hot Wheels at walls. Like, it's just in the programming somehow.
How interesting. I wonder what, like, the sort of, like, genetic coding in us to get us there is. Because it's so, like, it's so far removed from the state of nature that there's no way that it's, like, planned out, obviously, to take Mattel toys into account. But, like, what is the root behavior at all of this? Like, that would go into that. Is it because kids used to just throw rocks?
Oh, my God.
Probably. That makes sense for the cars, but then what's up with the Barbie? Like, that is dark, maybe, if we go too deep into it, you know?
It really is.
It really is concerning.
Maybe it's like questions about, like, we see the doll as a reflection of ourselves, you know?
It's exploratory.
Yeah, it's like, who are we at the core? And to do that,
you That's actually much lighter than that. I like that.
That was me trying to go light.
You know what? But actually, though, I think it actually had a great deal of depth to it. I actually think that was like the answer.
Oh, thank you.
But I love that, like, you went on a show on Netflix that was like taking engineering and applying it to baking, which for so many people, that would be a nightmare combination of things, because it is high level engineering and high level chemistry, because being good at baking is just really being a good chemist.
I went into that show knowing almost nothing about baking. Like, the concept was that they paired cake artists and engineers.
Yeah.
And like, they said like, hey, like, it'll be helpful if you study baking a bit so you can be like better able to collaborate with.
But they make it sound like a light suggestion. Right. Like, yeah. It could age you.
Also, as if it's something that's possible to just pick up. Like,
that's so true.
I like was like, okay, I'm reading about baking. Like, so I get there and we had like a boot camp essentially before filming started. Yeah. That was like getting situated in the kitchen and the workshop. And I was like, oh my God, I literally don't know any of these materials. I was like, I didn't realize how insane
baking is.
Yes. It's crazy.
It's really, really intricate, because during COVID, me, like literally everybody else, was like, okay, but what if I baked bread?
And did you?
I did. And I was like, bacio bread's kind of hard.
It's so hard. Oh my God. Did you try like sourdough?
Yeah. And sourdough is actually really hard. I felt really validated though the other day, because I saw a Nara Smith video and she makes everything from like molecular scratch. Like, I picked air out of the sky because my children wanted water, and so I started with evaporation. Like, you know, but she was like, I don't know how to make sourdough bread, so my sister's gonna come help me. And I was like, you know what, sourdough bread must actually be pretty hard if this lady whose whole shtick is making things from like scratch, like that take like weeks, and she struggles with sourdough. I feel a lot better.
Yeah, I think sourdough is one of the hardest things to bake, because you have to keep the starter alive. You have a living creature that, like,
that's what's weird about bread.
Yeah,
that's why pasta has a little bit of that, but it's so much more manageable.
No, it's chill. Pasta, when it's in a box, does not feel like a living creature.
No, you know? If anything, it just feels like a fossil, like a skeleton left over. You know, unless it's fresh pasta, in which case you're like, this is like a jellyfish.
Literally,
yeah. But when you went on the Netflix baking show, like, mentally preparing to be on like a Netflix reality show, what goes into that? Like, because I eat those things up. Like, I literally, pun intended, I love them. And so I always like wonder, like, what is it like? Like, are you anticipating drama, or are you planning for stress? Like, what are you planning for the most?
I was planning for drama. In my mind, I was like, I need to be
ready
and like resilient to whatever chaos like will be thrown at me, because you watch
practicing clapbacks in the mirror, like, this will be my moment on Twitter,
or literally also practicing being like non-reactive, like, I would literally just be like, okay, like if someone really like, can I curse?
If someone really fucks me over sure.
Like in like a countdown scenario, like there's minutes left, like what do I do? Like, I'm like running through these scenarios of under pressure, how do I react? Okay, turns out you cannot plan for these things. Like, I have so much respect for the shows that are like meant to be dramatic. Mm-hmm. Like the people on like RuPaul's Drag Race, for example, like that show's supposed to be dramatic. So I cannot even imagine the shenanigans the producers are pulling. Cause on my like chill show, it would still be like, we're mic'd up all day. Mm-hmm. When we go to lunch, we go to the bathroom, we're mic'd up.
The bathroom is horrifying.
Horrifying.
It's like literally horrific.
Literally. But like, I'd say something like, wow, I really hope that we have enough gelatin in the pantry.
And then they splice it over someone being like, God, like, I'm going to need a lot of gelatin today.
No, no, like, then there just wouldn't be gelatin in the pantry.
Oh, yeah. That's so much worse. What?
Or like, I'd be like, I really hope that we, you know, get to work with this team. And when I could tell the momentum was in me and Cindy, my team's favor, like, we would get to work with that team. Like, you had this feeling of like being a pawn in a game that you didn't understand.
That's like, crazy. Yeah,
insanity. And you have to just be like, all right, like,
I'm, let the wind take me.
Literally. I felt lucky. They gave me like a really good edit. Like, yeah. You never know what's going to happen.
You never know. And I honestly, like, I wish that, okay, this next thing I'm going to say, I'm being honest, but I'm lying. Okay. Okay. And I'll explain it in a second. Cause like, I watch the Netflix shows and part of me, like the mature part of me is like, you know, like, the stress of being edited that way must be just so, like, I'm sure they're a good person. But in the moment, yeah. In the moment, I'm like, God, what a bitch.
Literally.
Ew, I would beat the shit out of them. Ew. And I'm like pausing the show nonstop, turning to my boyfriend, being like, and if she said that to me, you know, what the fuck I would say? And he's like, what would you say? And I'd be like, I would tell her, like, you can stuff a muffin up your ass. Like, get out of my face. And I'm like, actually heated, like, telling him about it. And he's like, all right, she didn't do anything to you. And I'm like, I'm just saying. But like, I was there. I was there in the moment. Like, I felt it. So, you know, I go
this
back.
Is why these shows do well, right? Is because yeah. They can evoke this feeling. But it's also why a lot of people on unscripted and reality shows like feel so like helpless once the show airs.
Yeah.
Because you have no idea.
You don't know what's going to happen. And honestly, if I went on reality TV, I feel like I'm such like a strange personality. There's no fucking way I'm getting a good edit. Like, they're going to put like awkward, creepy music behind half the things I say. And it's going to be so fucking off-putting. And I'm going to be watching it back like, oh my God, I don't like me either. Like, that's terrible. Is that what I'm like?
The one thing that I felt like in my edit was not accurate. And this is like a big thing to not be accurate, but it's not bad, but like they absolutely made me look in love with my partner on the show.
What?
And
why?
Because we were such good friends. Like, and I was gassing her up constantly, telling her how amazing she's doing. And like we got really close, but they really made it look like there was like a meet cute happening on the show. And like to this day, my DMs are full of people asking if I'm like dating Cindy.
Did it work out? Like, are you guys still together?
Literally all the time, I get these questions. And then, at one point, I posted a photo of my boyfriend or my ex-boyfriend now, but on my Instagram story. And like, people were like, oh, like, where's Cindy? Like, we thought you and Cindy were, they thought it was this like, this man broke up me and Cindy.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, it's not that complex.
And you're like, listen, I'm still friends with Cindy.
Yeah, Cindy
like,
and I are friends.
We were always
men.
Friends.
Like, this is just not like.
You're like, I don't actually, I wasn't, like, the one thing I wasn't planning for was you guys shipping me with a woman.
Literally. I was like, first of all, how are they not clocking that I do not like women? But you know what? Whatever. A lot of.
You're like, I'm more incognito mode than I thought.
Yeah, literally. I was like, wow, I'm a little in camouflage.
You're like, people don't know.
Me? Yeah. But I really do like Cindy, so if someone's going to ship me with anyone, I wasn't mad about it.
I mean, yeah, that's like a good ship where you're like, I mean, we are in love in a way.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
So we have a theory, though.
Okay.
Okay, so before, I don't know if, whatever.
the immediate censorship, uncensor, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. I don't think they'll care. But so before we went on, they made us do this crazy psych evaluation.
Oh, that, yeah. Like, they always say they do that, and then... Did it feel legit to you?
It felt like it was so that they could create chaos.
Right. Like they actually want to know your problems. They can trigger you. Because that's what I've always assumed it's actually for. But it's like they can say it's liability.
No, I think it's what you just said.
Yeah.
So my theory and Cindy's theory is that Cindy and I must have answered exactly the same way. And they just thought, what would happen if we put two identical together. People on a team?
That's interesting and actually a smart move because it could go either way.
Yeah.
Either you guys get along super well and people are like, oh, cute. Like, they're so, like, compatible. We love it. It's so fun. Or you guys violently hate each other.
Yep. And it could have gone either. Glad it went the better one of
those
two. Yeah,
like, luckily it was positive. Yeah. But it could have been really negative. So when you were under pressure, do you feel that you were chill?
Okay, I think I was chill. even if I wasn't, they didn't include any footage of me not being chill.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, exactly. Hell yeah. I was like, this makes me look better than I am.
You're like, in real life. Was actually so calm that they didn't even bother showing it.
I was just meditating backstage.
Like, yeah. And then just relaxed.
Yeah. So no, in the moment, I think I was pretty chill, but also because I think I've dealt with, have I dealt with more stressful scenarios? No, maybe I never have. Maybe it was the most stressful thing I've literally ever done. Yeah, it probably was. It was also the most fun thing I've ever done.
That like helps a lot, you know, because like I feel like when something's really stressful, but you enjoy it, you're like, ah, it's worth it.
Big time.
Yeah.
And my biggest like enlightenment from this whole baking TV show experience mm-hmm. was just like, okay, I like almost, I love cake. Like, like I have such a profound appreciation for cake in a way that I never
had before.
Never.
Dude, like, cake is good.
Cake is good, but like, go on this journey with me for a second.
Okay, I'm locked in. Who's
been there at every single birthday party?
Literally cake.
Who's been there at every wedding?
Cake.
Some funerals.
Cake.
I don't know, probably like coronations for queen. Cake. Cake is this like thing. Humans
consistent have, thing.
Always there behind
it's us. It's celebratory because it's fucking awesome.
Exactly.
It makes everything better.
And the best thing a cake can do is bring joy. Right?
So true. And like, the worst thing it can do is just make you be like, I ate too many calories, but it was good though.
Yeah.
Like, who cares?
It's like, not like, you know, when you get like a fried chicken sandwich that's like not that good and you're like,
yeah. And then you're like, damn, was there a fucking tendon in there? That shit, that cannot happen with cake.
No, cake's always there for you. And as in this, the reason it was so profound for me though, and not just like, I'm not kidding. Like,
no, I can see it in your eyes. Like, I can see them lighting up. Like, they should have shipped you with, that's why they shipped you with Cindy. They saw like the look of love and they were like, surely this is for Cindy. And you were like, no, it's for the cake.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in engineering, everything is practical.
Yeah.
Literally everything is practical.
And necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like, it's crazy that there's this other world where in every culture in all of human history has evolved this dish that is just for joy. Like, yeah. Every culture on earth has a cake.
It's a wholly unnecessary additive, and yet it's actually so significant.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's like whenever you look at the news and you're like, wow, humans, we've created war. We've created famine. Also
cake, though.
And that's amazing.
That's a big W us, like as dumb. A species that we all love cake.
Aliens come down, they say, you got three items to try to prove humanity's worth it.
Cake's
got
to be on there.
What's another one?
Okay. This is a real risky one, but I think that it could explain humanity well. Like, it could act as a zeitgeist of sorts.
Sure.
For us as a concept, and that is a Monopoly game board.
Oh, wow.
I think that aliens would develop the strongest and swiftest love-hate relationship with humanity from that singular experience. And in turn, we would learn a lot about the aliens.
To watch them play the game.
Yeah. And like to see like, oh, you know, like some places we put all the free parking money, like we for like taxes and stuff, we put it in the middle. You guys think that's fair? And if they're like, okay, yeah, sure, fuck it. Or if they're like, no. Yeah. That would be very telling about their personality. Or like, they land on Boardwalk, there's a hotel on there. How do they react? Do they flip the fucking board? Yeah, we got to take those guys out. They're volatile.
No, you're right.
We can't risk it. But are they just like, oh man, good game. And then we're the ones who are like, you lost. Then they learn a lot about us. So wow. It would be risky because it could immediately start like an intergalactic war. But we would know exactly what kind of enemy or friend we are getting.
That's it would accelerate so much small talk. Like we would know them.
We would know them at their core when the stakes are really high, because although Monopoly is considered a long game, mm-hmm. it's much shorter than like a slow burn cold war.
For sure.
Space.
For sure.
You know?
Wow. Okay, so they've got Monopoly.
Cake. We should probably do the cake after Monopoly.
So true.
Soften the blow like a lot.
And you know what? If the Monopoly doesn't go well, maybe we skip the cake.
We might be like, you guys don't deserve cake, actually.
Like, we'll say, this is our best thing. You get none. You can't
have it.
Literally.
You can't have it. We're never going to teach you how to make it.
But now I'm really stuck on what the third thing would be.
The third thing That's a great question. The third thing should be, honestly, something that is completely meaningless to humanity, like a golf ball or something, like a truly random object. And then we just ask
them. So golf is meaningless to humanity.
Everyone's like, golf's actually the greatest game. I don't care. I'm actually good at golf. So four people go, she's just bad at golf. I'm good at golf and I still don't care. But no, like if we give them something like truly random and then we're like, this is of great importance to us.
And they just got to
think. And they're like, why? And we're like, why do you think? And we just wait for them to like impart meaning to it. I think that would also be very telling. I think I'm sort of like a Rumpelstiltskin of sorts with the aliens.
Okay, so you're definitely the messenger with these items.
Yeah, like, I'm just like very Bene Gesserit.
Yes. Like, I like that. Okay, see, if you left it to me, I probably would have sent them with an Oreo. Like
Oreos are so good though.
I mean.
Double stuff, obviously.
Double stuff for sure. It's almost kind of similar to cake. Like, it's kind of a cop-out to send.
It's not, though, because, like, you know what? It's actually so much more divisive than cake, purely because will they eat it all in one bite?
How will they eat it?
Will they even think to separate it?
It's true.
It says a lot.
It would be pretty amazing, a real-world scenario. Aliens come down. We give them an Oreo. They split
immediately
the Oreo.
Split the Oreo.
And, like, lick out the frosting.
And even do a little teeth, like, at the end.
The whole humanity would start applauding.
Humanity
start cheering.
Would be like, we have so much more in common than different.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Yes. That would be it, actually. And then we would be like, you want to dip it in milk? And we would find out if they're lactose intolerant or not.
It's a good question.
And they'd be like, what is milk? And we'd be like, don't worry about it. It's been in everything we've fed you so far. Don't think about it.
Wait, okay, secret. I actually don't know if... Okay, so I'm super lactose intolerant.
Yeah.
And on the baking show...
I didn't even think about how complex that would be for your baking.
Yeah, because I had... like lactase pills with me, so I could, but the amount I'd have to eat in order to like constantly be my stomach working. So I was either eating nothing or so gassy it was like just despicable.
That's
like
a fucking nightmare.
It was like one or the other. One day I'd be like, oh my god, what the fuck is happening in my stomach?
They gave you a good edit.
I know. But they didn't know this until
you are so lucky they didn't know.
I
that.
Know. But the way they found out is literally in the very last moments. Like it's us versus another team. They're about to reveal the winner. And they say like they like do like a little pause. They're like, we're gonna do like little team interviews. Mm-hmm. And they interview and they go, oh Taylor, like in which bite, like, could you taste the most of like Cindy's care and affection or something like
You're
that?
Really going in on the ship. That's crazy.
Really. And I was like, to be honest, like I didn't try any of her finished things. And they're like, what? Why? I'm like, because I'm lactose intolerant. And they're like, so you like didn't try any of them? I'm like, well, not lately. Like I was so frazzled. I was like, fuck, how do I like reveal this without like making them
making it a
like,
plot.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, don't make this part of the plot. Like,
you're
please.
Like, please. Like, I don't want people to know.
Don't judge me for having an upset tummy.
You're like, I'm sorry. That's like incredible to me. Being lactose intolerant is something that like I think is really funny purely because
oh yeah?
I hate milk. Like, and I'm not lactose intolerant, but I hate milk. And every time I tell people like it's not for me. They're always like, oh, you're lactose intolerant. And then I'm like, no, I just don't fuck with it.
Is it the concept or is it the taste?
It's actually the taste. Like, I don't mind things that have milk. Like, I put like milk in my coffee. I'll do like ice cream for sure, which like I recognize that like a lot of ice cream just kind of tastes like milk. But for some reason, like the concept of just a cup of milk or like milk in my cereal, I just like can't get past it.
Milk in cereal is kind of crazy. Like,
I don't know.
It's like, I understand why when there was less breakfast options, people were all about it. Because it's like protein and carbs and like...
It's a good balance.
It totally is. Yeah. But like when you have the option of not having that...
When there's a good steel cut oatmeal available
even. Yes.
With like maybe almond milk if you need it to be like liquidy.
Mm-hmm.
that's always going to beat out cereal and milk to me.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, I'm glad that we're on the same page about this. People are going to be like, it's just because he's lactose intolerant. This is why people keep asking you. But I have always been a milk hater. And for some reason, that becomes like super controversial.
Oh, no, it is. Because people will think you're like saying you love vegan milk alternatives.
Yeah, which like not really. They're like fine. Mid, to be honest. Like, they're okay. Like, I'll do it. I don't have a problem with them, but I'll do it. I'm still not going to drink like a glass of almond milk, though. No, is the thing.
For
like,
sure not.
I think honestly, the white liquid.
Oh yeah.
It's just like, I think I see it and then I go, nah. Like, I just don't.
It's not appetizing.
I don't think that like. Oh. I don't think that like.
You see? Okay.
I just look at it and I go, I don't think I'm supposed to fucking do that. Like. Yeah. I know that like. It was important for surviving famine. And like, that's why people evolved to be able to drink milk. Like, you're lactose intolerant because one of your ancestors was able to eat,
yeah, right.
to eat through winter.
I'm worse than you.
No, because no, actually, your ancestors were doing a better job.
Oh.
They had access to like food and water consistently. They didn't have to worry about like dying in winter. Other people, liquid. Though, they had to be like, I'm going to suckle a cow so that I don't die out here in the frozen tundra that is my life.
And you know what?
You should feel good about that.
Yeah, that's like, thank you, great, 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 great grandpa.
Yeah, for like being real as fuck, like being prepared as hell. It's like, I'm not lactose intolerant. So that means my great, 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 great grandparents were like, suffering and they didn't have shit going for them, and I'm like, damn guys, get up. Like,
to be fair though, the people who were suffering and had to drink milk probably were the same people who eventually invented ice cream.
Oh, definitely. And which like, is like a huge W,
huge,
like massive
W.
And it's really, honestly, it's all that brings them back for me. I do love ice cream, but like when you like think about the first person to pitch that. Like, who was like, hey guys, I know we're all really hungry, but I kind of figured it out. And then people are like, oh my god, you found food, like where are the crops? And they're like, no. And they're like, oh, you hunted, you like, where you, do we gotta like skin something? And he's like, not in that way,
better.
And then they're like, okay, what is it? And he just, or she could go either way, honestly, shows a glass of milk, and they're like, where did you get this? What is it? And then they have to explain, I was looking at a cow, and there was a baby cow, and I thought, why not me? And then I brought it back for you guys.
And they were sharing. That was
they were
so
like,
kind.
Thank you, but also, what the fuck? Like, what's happening over there?
That's crazy.
It's hard to be a pioneer.
It is. And you know what, though? Like, I think it's amazing that that person succeeded and wasn't, like, shunned out of town as, like, a witch or something.
They might have been shunned out of town. Honestly,
but they left the glass of milk there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if people were like, you're fucking weird. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And then a couple days later, they're like, was it that weird that Igor did that?
Take or a little like, tentative
would it be
step?
Weird if, like, I did it? Like, I'm pretty hungry. And then it just sort of spiraled, you know, and they eventually accepted it.
Well, if you told that person that that would probably affect, like, maybe 10, I don't know. When did we start milking cows?
I looked this up recently, actually. We've only been milking cows, I think, for like, I want to say, like, 2,100 years or something like that. Because it started in Europe. Unsurprising.
Whoa.
Seems very European.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
The people who ate mummies, of course.
They would be drinking milk.
They would be drinking milk and suckling cows. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Also, while we're on cows, do you know the origin of the word fuck? Because it's from cows.
There's no way.
It used to not be a swear word at all, let alone like a high-ranking one like it is now.
It's like a greeting between cows? Because it sounds like
in a way,
cow move.
It's exactly what it is now, but it was like considered more like medical, you know?
Oh.
It was like similar, like if you said the word like breeding now, people would be like, yeah, G-rated.
Literally.
It was basically that.
Like we have to send the cows to fucking. It's
yeah,
like,
they're like, oh, go
season.
Fuck the cows. Like, make sure the cows fuck. And then everyone was like, on it, sir. You know, and then now you're like, oh, what the fuck? And people are like, shh, Jesus.
Wow.
Mind your manners. Oh my gosh. You might get demonetized for that.
Literally.
But that's, really, it's like a weird evolution.
That's an amazing origin story because most curse words do not have like elegant.
No,
like,
at all.
Like, it's like, that's what someone called a person and that became and a
slur. They went, like, the way that you said that was so heinous. Yeah. That's changed that word forever.
Literally.
Yeah. That's like where it all comes from is like somebody at some point took a word that was totally innocuous. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine that you were just like such a hating ass bitch that you looked at somebody and you were like, God, you're like a chair. And you said like a totally normal word, mm-hmm. but you said it in such like a fucked way that people were like, honestly, you should never be allowed to say that word again in schools or church or mm-hmm. honestly on television.
That's like powerful to know that you were the person who ended that word.
Yeah, changed the trajectory of a word forever. Like, you are like an actual like Olympic level hater.
Wow. Do you think you ever like could be that level of hater?
Honestly, I feel like when I get like upset, which I have a very long fuse in general, because I feel like I am at a point in my life where something crazy will happen and I can only take it so seriously. Mm. I'm just like, that was whack. You're really upset right now.
Yo, but people don't react well.
No, they don't. And it makes it worse and then it makes it funnier for me. Like, I've like, I think my like wires are crossed up there with that kind of stuff. But like, if I do get really upset, like, I feel like I become a medieval poet of sorts. Like, oh. I'm like cursing your bloodline and in such specific ways that like years later people will be like, do you remember when you said that to me? That really got at my core of wow. my being. I changed my life because of that. And I'm like, as you should, because you were being a bitch. So you're welcome. But I feel like generally, like, I'm not even like a swear heavy person mm. in those moments, even though I have like a sailor mouth when I'm like calm. I'll just be like, you know why you're so insecure about that? Like, just dark with it. Which,
well, because like, when you're a nice person, I think you're a nice person.
Thank you.
At least I trust that you are, but maybe you're like secret evil.
Might be secret evil.
But like, when you're a nice person and you like are close with friends, like, you know their insecurities.
Yeah.
But as a respectful person, you don't bring them up often.
Yeah, when I'm upset, I won't even say it in an exploitative way or something and be like, and you should be insecure about that. If somebody's doing something that gets me to a point of freaking out, it's because they've truly crossed a line.
Mm.
And then I will like dissect why they felt comfortable crossing that line to them and be like, and that's why you have problems in all these other fucking areas. And then I'll leave and they'll be like,
shit,
Jesus Christ. But I don't like that part of my personality. I just know that it's in there if mm-hmm. I get pushed that far. I'm not like a meltdown person. I'm just like a, you have a real problem. And like, here is the diagram of how you got here.
I'm so similar. Like, I'm not a meltdown person, but if I'm really, really angry, I'll like press the button on yeah, the person.
Where you're like,
boop. This is your thing that I know hurts. And then I yeah. just feel so bad.
And then it feels terrible. So like, the thing is also though, if you get me to that point, which is rare, I'll get mm-hmm. to that point maybe every like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I truly said whatever I said and will stand by that till I die. Mm. Like, whatever I'm not somebody who will say something just because they're upset that they don't mean. I'll say something and be like, and I mean that. And someone had to tell you that.
Mm.
And even if we make up later, I hope you internalize what I'm telling you right now.
Totally.
Because you need to hear it. And because also, whenever people get upset with me in that way, which is like a very specific font of person,
mm-hmm.
it generally does affect real change in my life. Because I'll be like, oh, fuck. Like, what? Okay, I'll stop doing that. And I think it actually makes me a better person. So like, it's not like I'm so awesome that when I mean, I'm saving lives and constructing. Like, I'm not thinking about it in that way. I'm obviously just like freaking out and being a bitch. But, you know, like, I think that like that may be like a slightly like healthier way.
Oh, yeah. When someone cares about you and is angry at you, the thing that they're angry about is usually important to discuss.
Yeah, you know? It's like, you're better than that. Like, I feel like that's where I get like disappointed dad, where I'm like, you're better than that. I'll be doing that, you know? Yeah, but like, how do we get here? We're on milk.
I literally don't know.
But like, the point is with milk.
Right, back to milk.
Because I stand on business, I will mm-hmm. never switch up my feelings about milk, and I'll never apologize for being an avid milk hater.
I think that I hope that that comment does not age like milk. I think there's a world. I think that, you know, this could be a clip that like comes back and they're like, you know, wow, Daisy really, really just like shat all over cows. And like, now that we live in a cow forward society.
It's like, I think about things like that all the time where I'm just like, you know what? Once dogs can talk, shit's going to change.
Whoa.
It's going to get crazy. A lot of people's dogs, I don't think they like.
They know things.
They know things, but I don't think they like them is the problem.
If you could have like dogs on TMZ and like dogs spill about their celebrity owners.
Right? Where they're like, dude, all I wanted to do was like go bark at a bird. Sue me. And she was like pulling on my leash being like, oh my God, shut up. Let me just get it out. Like sometimes you just got to bark at a bird. Like I think there's a lot of owners that like love their dogs. And I'm like, I don't know that that dog loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think that you violate that dog's boundaries a lot. Especially with little dogs like that are kind of vicious. I feel like that happens because like they're getting scooped up all the time when they don't want to be. You know, because like some little dogs like to be held. But like imagine you're like upset about something and then God picks you up from the sky and is like, calm down and swinging you around. I'm like never going to be less calm than in that moment probably. And I think that's why like little chihuahuas are always like on freaking edge.
Oh yeah. I mean the whole world is massive to them.
That's what I'm saying. I would be sick of people throwing me back and forth if I was like that dog. I think that's why they're always upset. Because I've met some chihuahuas so calm all the time. And I'm like, that's because I feel like you have a really good owner that knows when you want to be picked up and when you don't. You know?
Totally.
Speaking of dogs though.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think of robot dogs.
Oh, does it?
And you work with robots, and you work with robots that make art.
I've done, quite a bit of art-making robots.
What do you think about, like, the discourse surrounding, like, AI getting involved in art? Because a lot of people think it's a really cool tool, could potentially be, like, a new medium. And other people are really upset where they're like, let's reserve art for humans. What do you think?
I wish I had, like, a truly profound answer that would sway. But the reason I want to have one is because I think there's a lot of people with strong opinions on this.
Mm-hmm.
And my like truth around this is honestly just not as like strong. Yeah. It's simple, which is just when like the calculator came out, like teachers were boycotting calculators.
Right.
There's news articles about people thinking this will be the end of education.
Yeah.
Okay, not the case, right?
Of course not.
And when digital photography came out, photographers were like, we'll never know what's true, what's fake, because you can edit photos. And we still live on, right? Like,
yeah.
With Photoshop photos, but like we live. So I think that like there's a lot of precedents for tools that have totally changed the way that art making and like learning has gone on. But I don't think, and this is where I feel like I'm a bit of an alarmist, but like I don't think we've ever had tools that can replace the creative process in such an extreme way. And it's like a betrayal to an art viewer or a music listener or somebody who walks through a museum who might believe that something is like the product of somebody's lived experience to learn it's actually the product of a robot.
Right.
When like I work on art making robots, I'm usually working on machines that humans control to make pieces that human hands can't make.
Right.
But when you look at like generative AI tools, it's really making a complete work without human intervention in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And then eliciting emotional responses in people. And like I find that very confusing and sort of a little upsetting. Like I kind of think human emotions should be reserved for humans, right? I don't think like, you know, a robot should or a generative AI algorithm should be like in a position to elicit emotional responses from me. It feels like a waste of my emotional energy in a sense.
Mm-hmm. I get what you mean by that. For me, words still out for me. Like I feel like I've taken a sort of agnostic approach to it where I just feel that I don't have enough information because it's all so new.
Mm.
And I think like when people think of like AI, there's a lot of people who are like immediately go to like robots are going to take over the world.
Yeah.
And like so when they think of AI and art, they're like, imagine the propaganda that they could make. And for me, I don't think we have to worry about like robots taking over the world.
I don't think so either.
Purely because of like two key reasons that I think are often overlooked. They live in an unlimited landscape. you know, like algorithmically, like there are no geographical confines to their experience were they to be like fully sentient, you know? And so therefore, like physical land, that's something that is like a inherently human thing to give a fuck about, you know? So I don't think we have to worry about them taking over countries because just don't see it being meaningful, you know, for them. Secondly, if you're a sort of like manufactured creature, you're like presumably like immortal in a sense, and time moves differently for you, we would assume. So if that were the case, it would be a lot easier to just like wait for human beings to either like die out or move so far away that they're essentially irrelevant, which could maybe feel like 2 weeks to them, than it would be to like conquer humanity.
Totally.
It's like a very human perspective to think of, to fear being conquered, because that's something that like we do and literally like nothing else really does.
It's a great point. Like if we try to imagine what an intelligent machine capable of human level intelligence would do, I think it's not what humans would do, right? Yeah,
it would. I mean, ideally, if this is like if we're looking from an engineering perspective, it's doing what it's supposed to do. Ideally, it surpasses human intellect.
Totally.
I mean, though that might make people feel like uncomfortable, that's like the ideal, like, you know, that's how you know like we've made something that's truly optimized, right?
And today's computers are, in specific cases, way more powerful than
what we could do.
Yeah,
purely because like time is taken out of the equation. That's like a huge like leg up, where like a human being to solve certain mathematical equations would have to sit down for tens of thousands of hours sometimes, depending on how complex it is. And you could make any number of mistakes at any point in time and then have to start all over. Whereas like a computer, it has unlimited time to process this because it's just, it's operating in a completely parallel and distinct like universe in its way.
In fact, we have to explain and give computers time, right?
Yeah.
They, most processes are not necessarily done ordinarily over time. That's a thing we do to programming languages to make them easier for humans to code.
Yeah, for us.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good point that if you were a sentient machine, like you wouldn't necessarily be excited to rush into anything.
Yeah,
you know?
There would be no need, because like why conquer a globe when you can just wait for it to disappear?
I think that would freak people out. Like if we knew we had this ultra intelligent, ultra capable thing that we like couldn't turn off, and we knew it was waiting for us to fail our own societies, like, I think people would be really uncomfortable, even though...
They would, because they would know there's a clock on us. But the thing is, if you don't know that already, maybe you haven't thought about it. And, like, that doesn't have to mean, like, we're dying. It just means that, like, everything is in a constant state of flux, right? So the clock on us, as we are now, in our current iteration, has always been ticking. So either like we cease to exist or we change so much that we're incomparable.
And like, you know, the concept of Moore's law in computing, just that basically things get twice as powerful and half as expensive every couple, 2 years, I think. That's just the most obvious case of how accelerationism is affecting our lives. But like, there's like a dozen other domains where like, human advancements are so ridiculously fast that like we might not resemble ourselves 20 years
medical
from now.
Tech for one.
Oh yeah.
It's the biggest space, and it's also the easiest to get IP in.
So, I mean, it's
shockingly.
It seems crazy that that's true. Like there's but so many people making crazy stuff.
You don't have to be a doctor to get, I have biomedical tech. I'm a college dropout.
Yeah.
You don't have to. You have to get it reviewed by a doctor before they put it in person, you know? There's other checks and balances, but that's why it's one of the broadest industries within IP.
So in, like, I think it was granted in 2023, but it might not be granted. I got to look up the patent application. But the last project I did sort of in the research lab I used to be in was on edible data storage. And I took, like, all my learning from the baking show and was like, okay, like, what can I do with this? And we had this intern come in who was like, I want to do edible data storage. And we were like, sick, let's do it. So we did it from like a biomedical engineering perspective, which was like, if you could make edible devices, how might that change diagnostics? So basically we took, not to get too in the weeds, but like we took chocolate and then we took edible gold leaf. And then we varied the pattern in a way that when you hit it with a radio wave, it sends back a signal. And you can have this chocolate circuit react to things like pH in your stomach or like electrolyte content somewhere else in your body. So we were imagining a world where like you eat a chocolate bar, goes into your tummy, put like a scanner over your belly, and then it pulls diagnostic information, and then you digest the chocolate. And who knows if we'll reach that exact reality.
But that, to me, surface level seems entirely possible with that approach.
Kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, you've just created a more organic computer, which is sort of what all life is.
An organic computer.
Yeah. We're out of time, but that was like a great place to end. Is there anything that you need to plug?
Anything I need to plug? Honestly, no.
plug your socials at least.
Oh, yeah, I should plug my socials. Wait, how do I plug my socials? Give me a
pro tip. Do you have a TikTok?
Mostly Instagram.
Okay. What's your Instagram?
My Instagram is Taylor Tab, which is my name, with no spaces, just at Taylor Tab.
Follow Taylor Tab. See what cool stuff Taylor's doing, because he's always doing really interesting, unique things.
I think so. Thank you.
I think so, too.
Thank you so much for having me on today. It was so fun to chat with you.
Thank you so much for coming. I had a great time as well. Definitely come back.
No doubt. Yeah.
Of course. Thank you. This was such a treat. Step up to the mic to introduce Daisy. That's the name for Followed by the Gay.